Chapter 13. A visit to Mr. Samuel Pepys. There are several unjustifiable extravagances which every normal man commits. There are also several unjustifiable economies. Among others, there is that absurd eagerness to save the striking of a second match, which occasions so many burnt fingers and such picturesque language. And again, there is the desire to compress a telegraphic message into the minimum sixpennyworth, and so send an ambiguous and cryptic sentence, when sevenpence would have made it as clear as light. We all tend to be stylists in our telegrams. A week after the conversation about Mr. Pepys, when some progress had been made with the reading of the diary, Maud received the following wire from Frank_Mrs. Cross. Woking. Pepys buttered toast suede gloves for monument weight late. As a sixpennyworth it was a success, but as a message it seemed to leave something to be desired. Maud puzzled over it, and tried every possible combination of the words. The nearest approach to sense was when it was divided in this way: Pepys, buttered toast, suede gloves, for, monument, weight late. She wrote it out in this form, and took it section by section. Pepys, apostrophe that was unintelligible. Buttered toast, apostrophe no sense in that. Suede gloves, apostrophe yes, as he had told Frank, that when she came to town, she would buy some suede gloves at a certain shop in the city, where she could get 4 3 and 3 pence a pair, which would cost her 3 and 9 pence in Woking. Maud was so conscientiously economical that she was always prepared to spend 2 shillings in railway fares to reach a spot where a sixpence was to be saved, and to lavish her nerve and energy freely in the venture. Here, then, in the suede gloves, was a central point of light. And then her heart bounded with joy, as she realized that the last part could only mean that she was to meet Frank at the monument at 4, and that she was to wait for him if he were late. So, now, returning to the opening of the message, with the light which shone from the ending, she realized that buttered toast might refer to a queer little city hostel, remarkable for that luxury, where Frank had already taken her twice to tea. And so, leaving Mr. Pepys to explain himself later, Maud gave hurried orders to Jemima and the cook, and dashed upstairs to put on her new fawn-colored walking dress, a garment which filled her with an extraordinary mixture of delight and remorse, for it was very smart, cost 7 guineas, and had not yet been paid for. The rendezvous was evidently a sudden thought upon the part of Frank, for he had left very little time for her to reach the trysting place. However, she was fortunate in catching a train to Waterloo, and another thence to the city, and so reached the monument at 4:05. The hour was just striking when Frank, with his well-brushed top hat and immaculate business frock coat, came rushing from the direction of King William Street. Maud held out her hand, and he shook it, and then they both laughed at the formality. "I am so glad you were able to come, dearest. How you do brighten up the old city. ? I felt quite lonely until you came. Nothing but droves of men, and all staring. ? It's your dress. ? Thank you, sir. ? Entirely that pretty brown. ? Fawn color. ? Well, that's brown. Anyhow, it looks charming. And so do you, by Jove you do, Maud. Come this way. Where are we going? By underground. Here we are, 2 second singles, Mark Lane please. No, that's for the West End trains. Down here. Next train, the man says. They were in the mephitic cellar, with the 2 long wooden platforms, where the subterranean trains land or load their freights. A strangling gas tickled their throats, and set them coughing. It was all dank, and dark and gloomy. But little youth and love care for that. They were bubbling over with the happiness of this abnormal meeting. Both talked together in their delight, and Maud patted Frank's sleeve with every remark. They could even illuminate all that was around them, by the beauty and brightness of their own love. It went the length of open praise for their abominable surroundings. Isn't it grand and solemn? Apostrophe apostrophe said Maud. Look at the black shadows. Apostrophe apostrophe when they come to excavate all this some thousands of years hence, they will think it was constructed by a race of giants, apostrophe Frank answered. The modern works for the benefit of the community are really far greater than those which sprang from the caprice of kings. The London and Northwestern Railway is an infinitely grander thing than the pyramids. Look at the two headlights in the dark. Apostrophe two sullen crimson discs glowed in the black arch of the tunnel. With a menacing and sinister speed, they grew and grew until roaring they sprang out of the darkness, and the long, dingy train, with a whining of brakes, drew up at the platform. Here's one nearly empty, apostrophe said Frank, with his hand on the handle. Don't you think, apostrophe said Maud. Yes, I do, apostrophe cried Frank. And they got into one which was quite empty. For the Underground Railway is blessed as regards privacy above all other lines, and where could a loving couple be more happy, who have been torn apart by cruel fate for 7 long hours or so? It was with a groan that Frank remarked that they had reached Mark Lane. Bother! Apostrophe apostrophe said Maud, and wondered if there were any shop near where she could buy hairpins. As every lady knows, or will know, there is a very intimate connection between hairpins and a loving husband. Now, Frank, about your telegram. Apostrophe apostrophe all right, dear. Come along where I lead you, and you will understand all about it. Apostrophe apostrophe they passed out of Mark Lane station, and down a steep and narrow street to the right. At the bottom, lay an old smoke-stained church with a square tower, and a small open churchyard beside it. That's the Church of St. Olave, apostrophe said Frank. We are going into it. Apostrophe apostrophe he pushed open a folding oaken door, and they found themselves inside it. Rows of modern seats filled the body of it, but the walls and windows gave an impression of great antiquity. The stained glass, especially that which surmounted the altar, contained those rich satisfying purples and deep deep crimsons which only go with age. It was a bright and yet a mellow light, falling in patches of vivid color upon the brown woodwork and the gray floors. Here and there upon the walls were marble inscriptions in the Latin tongue, with pompous allegorical figures with trumpets, for our ancestors blew them in stone as well as in epitaphs over their tombs. They loved to die, as they had lived, with dignity and with affectation. White statues glimmered in the shadows of the corners. As Frank and his wife passed down the side aisle, their steps clanged through the empty and silent church. Here he is. Apostrophe apostrophe said Frank, and faced to the wall. He was looking up at the modern representation of a gentleman in a full and curly wig. It was a well-rounded and comely face, with shrewd eyes and a sensitive mouth. The face of a man of affairs, and a good fellow, with just that saving touch of sensuality about it which makes an expression human and lovable. Underneath was printed, Samuel Pepys erected by public subscription 1883. Oh, isn't he nice? Apostrophe apostrophe said Maud. He's not a bad-looking chap, is he? Apostrophe apostrophe I don't believe that man ever could have struck his wife, or kicked the maid. Apostrophe apostrophe that's calling him a liar. Apostrophe apostrophe oh dear, I forgot that he said so himself. Then I suppose he must have done it. What a pity it seems. Apostrophe cheer up. We must say what the old heathen lady said when they read the Gospels to her. Apostrophe apostrophe what did she say? Apostrophe apostrophe she said, well, it was a long time ago, and we'll hope that it wasn't true. Apostrophe apostrophe oh Frank, how can you tell such stories in a church? Do you really suppose that Mr. Pepys is in that wall? Apostrophe apostrophe I presume that the monument marks the grave. Apostrophe apostrophe there's a little bit of plaster loose. Do you think I might take it? Apostrophe apostrophe it isn't quite the thing. Apostrophe apostrophe but it can't matter, and it isn't wrong, and we are quite alone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she picked off the little flake of plaster, and her heart sprang into her mouth as she did so, for there came an indignant snort from her very elbow, and there was a queer little smoke-dried, black-dressed person who seemed to have risen, like the Eastern genii or a modern genius, in a single instant. A pair of black list slippers explained the silence of his approach. Put that back, young lady, apostrophe, said he severely. Poor Maud held out her guilty relic on the palm of her hand. I am so sorry, apostrophe, said she. I am afraid I cannot put it back. Apostrophe, we love a lay church picked to pieces at this rate, apostrophe, said the clerk. You shouldn't have done it, and it was very wrong. Apostrophe, he snorted and shook his head. It's of no consequence, apostrophe, said Frank. The plaster was hanging, and must have fallen in any case. Don't make a fuss about a trifle. Apostrophe, the clerk looked at the young gentleman and saw defiance in one of his eyes and half a crown in the other. Well, well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he grumbled. It shows as the young lady takes an interest, and that's more than most. Why, sir, if you'll believe me, there's not one in 100 that comes to this church that ever heard of peepees. Peepees, says they. Who's peepees? He diarist, says I irist. Says they, what's a diarist? I could sit down sometimes and cry. But maybe, miss, you thought as you were picking that plaster off his grave? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, I thought so. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the clerk chuckled. Well, it ain't so. I'll tell you where he really lies, if you'll promise you won't pick another chunk off that. Well, then, it's there, beside the communion. I saw him lying there with these very eyes, and his wife in the coffin beneath him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you saw him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir, I saw him, and that's more than any living man could say, for there were only four of us, and the other three are as dead as peepees by now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, do tell us about it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Maud. Well, it was like this, miss. We had to examine to see how much room there was down there, and so we came upon them. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and what did you see? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, miss, his coffin lay above, and his wife's below, as might be expected, seeing that she died 30 years or so before him. The coffin was very much broken, and we could see him as clear as, I can see you. When we first looked in, I saw him lying quite plain, a short thick figure of a man, with his hands across his chest. And then, just as we looked at him, he crumbled in, as you might say, across his breastbone, and just quietly settled down into a huddle of dust. It's a way they is when the fresh air strikes him. And she the same, and his dust just fell through the chinks o' the wood, and mixed itself with hers. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh Frank. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Maud's ready tears sprang to her eyes. She put her hand upon her husband's, and was surprised to find how cold it was. Women never realize that the male sex is the more sensitive. He had not said, oh Maud. Apostrophe, apostrophe, because he could not. They used some powder like pepper for embalming in those days, apostrophe, said the clerk. And the vicar, it was in old Bellamy's time, he took a sniff into the grave, and he sneezed and sneezed till we thought we should have to fetch a doctor. Avenue, you seen Mrs. Peepy's tomb? Apostrophe, no, we have only just come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that's it on the left of the common. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with the woman leaning forward? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir. That's Mrs. Peepy's herself. Apostrophe, it was an arch laughing face, the face of a quite young woman. The sculptor had depicted her as leaning forward in an animated and natural attitude. Below was engraved dash obiit. Zone of Embrus. Edidus 29. Conjugii 15. Anno Domini 1669. Poor dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered Maud. It was hard that she should die just as her husband and was becoming famous and successful, apostrophe, said Frank. She who had washed his shirts and made up the coal fires when they lived in a garret together. What a pity that she could not have a good time. apostrophe apostrophe ah well, if she loved him, dear, as he had a good time in the garret. Apostrophe apostrophe Maud was leaning forward with her face raised to look at the bust of the dead woman, which also leaned forward, as if to look down upon her. A pair of marble skulls flanked the lady's grave. A red glow from the evening sun struck through a side window, and bathed the whole group in its ruddy light. As Frank, standing back in the shadow, ran his eyes from the face of the dead young wife to that of his own sweet, girlish bride, with those sinister skulls between, there came over him like a wave, a realization of the horror which lies in things, the grim close of the passing pageant, the black gloom, which swallows up the never-ending stream of life. Will the spirit wear better than the body? And if not, what infernal practical joke is this to which we are subjected? It will. It must, apostrophe he said. Why, Frank, Frank dear, what is the matter? You are quite pale. Apostrophe come out into the air, Maud. I have had enough of this stuffy old church. Apostrophe apostrophe stuffy. Apostrophe apostrophe said the clerk. Well, we've had the Lord Mayor here at least once a year, and he never found it stuffy. A cleaner, fresher church you won't find in the City of London. It's had its day, I'll allow. There was a time, and I can remember it, when folk used to spend their money where they made it, and the plate would be full of paper and gold, where now we find it hard enough to get coppers. That was 50 years ago, when I was a young clerk. You might not think it, but I've seen a Lord Mayor, a past Lord Mayor, and a Lord Mayor-elect of the City of London, all sitting on one bench in this very church. And you call it stuffy. Apostrophe Frank soothed the wounded feelings of the old clerk, and explained that by stuffy he meant interesting. He also shook hands with him in a peculiar way as he held his palm upturned in the small of his back. Then Maud and he retraced their steps up the narrow street which is called Seething Lane. Poor old boy! What was it, then? Apostrophe asked Maud, looking up with her sympathetic eyes. It is at such moments that a man realizes what the companionship of women means. The clouds melted before the sun. What an ass I was! I began to think of all sorts of horrible things. Never mind, Maud. We are out for a holiday. Hang the future. Let us live in the present. Apostrophe I always do, apostrophe said Maud, and she spoke for her sex. Well, what now? Buttered toaster suede gloves. Apostrophe business first. Apostrophe apostrophe said Maud primly, and so proceeded to save her sixpence on the gloves. As she was tempted, however, such a civil obliging shopman, Frank, apostrophe apostrophe, to buy 4 yards of so-called astrakhan trimming, a frill of torchon lace, 6 dear little festooned handkerchiefs, and 4 pairs of open-work stockings, none of which were contemplated. When she entered the shop, her sixpenny saving was not as brilliant a piece of finance as she imagined. And then they finished their excursion in the dark, wainscoted, low-ceilinged coffee room of an old-fashioned inn, once the mother of many coaches, and now barren and deserted, but with a strange cunning in the matter of buttered toast which had come down from more prosperous days. It was a new waiter who served them, and he imagined them to be lovers, and scented an intrigue. But when they called for a second plate of toast, and a jug of boiling water, he recognized the healthy appetite of the married. And then, instead of going home like a good little couple, Maud suddenly got it into her head that it would cheer away the last traces of Frank's gloom if they went to see Charlie's aunt at the Globe. So they loitered and shopped for a couple of hours, and then squeezed into the back of the pit, and wedged in among honest hearty folk who were not ashamed to show their emotions, they laughed until they were tired. And so home, as their friend Peepees would have said, after such a day as comes into the memory, shining golden among the drab, when old folk look back, and think of the dear dead past. May you and I, reader, if ever we also come to sit in our final armchairs in the chimney corners, have many such to which our minds may turn, sweet and innocent and fragrant, to cheer us in those darksome hours to come. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.